You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM.
On New Year's Eve, they had a union contract at an automotive plant for U.S. heavy equipment giant Caterpillar, Inc. The next day, over 400 members of Canadian Auto Workers Local 27 were locked out of their factory, Electromotive Diesel, or EMD. London, Ontario is home to that auto plant and currently has an unemployment rate of nearly 10%. Since the lockout began, there have been pickets, a mass rally of some 5 to 15,000 supporters, and even a blockade of a train delivering a locomotive from the plant. Fears regarding the loss of well-paying jobs in the community have intensified debate over how the labor movement should respond. Doug Nesbitt is co-chief steward of PSAC 901, which represents Queen's University Teaching Assistants and Fellows. He also co-hosts Rank and File Radio, a weekly labor news program on CFRC 101.9 FM. Doug is the author of the recent article, Canadian Labor at the Crossroads, which appeared in the bullet of the Socialist Project. Hello, Doug. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Welcome to Red Eye. So let's begin with the contract that the workers there in Caterpillar or EMD have signed, or that they were offered. What was the employer EMD's final offer to the workers?
The last offer, which led to the strike vote, which was 97% in favor, was there were really three main things. One was cutting of benefits, eliminating of pensions, and the big thing was the 50% wage cut, down from about $35 or $36 an hour to about $16, $17 an hour.
Can you describe what kind of position the local auto plant, EMD, and the larger company are in, given the wage cut they were demanding? Are they in financial difficulties?
Well, yeah, just a couple days ago, and also if you dug up any of the news reports from 3 months ago, Caterpillar, the company that owns Progress Rail, which owns the factory, has had basically record-level profits as well as revenues, so they're doing incredibly well because they're supplying they're the world's largest heavy equipment supplier, so they're making plenty of money off the resource sector like the tar sands and mining around the world. So the company is highly profitable, but they're still making these demands on the workers.
And there are rumors that Caterpillar intends to move or thinking of moving their operations to Indiana. Can you elaborate a little on those rumors?
Yeah, there have been rumors, and there's a lot of discussion about the possibility of the plant being moved to Muncie, Indiana, where the workers there are paid about a third of the current wage in London. And on top of that, Indiana just passed what's called a right-to-work law, which exists in many U.S. states, but it's the first time it's existed in one of the Rust Belt states, one of the industrial states of the North. So it essentially really cripples the union's abilities to collect dues to build a solid organization. So Caterpillar, yeah, there's the possibility of them, it seems like, closing down the London plant and moving operations to Indiana.
Can you explain or get into a little more detail on the right-to-work legislation? How does that, I mean, it sounds like a nice phrase, right to work, but how does that cripple, why does it damage unions so and organizing?
Well, they're state to state, there are all sorts of variations on it, but the main thing that it does is it allows somebody, say, working under a union contract to get all the benefits of that union contract, but they don't actually have to pay dues to the union. So it essentially undercuts the financial stability of the unions and kind of creates the conditions for some workers to not see the unions as really helping them. And there are other aspects of it, and I don't really know the details of the Indiana right to work law, but it's essentially being opposed right now by Indiana's labor movement. There have been some large protests there, so I think that people can find out pretty quickly doing some basic research on the internet, but it's certainly not pro-union.
I understand you were at a January 21st rally organized by the Ontario Federation of Labour. What is your assessment of that action in terms of furthering a winning strategy for the workers there at the EMD plant?
Well, it was pretty impressive in terms of numbers. I'd say it was about 10,000 people. I was a little concerned that the rally was moved from the picket lines out by the factory to downtown London to a park where it was just a rally. There wasn't even a march. But since then, there seems to have been a little movement. There have been pickets happening at Caterpillar dealerships across the country, and there's been that train blockade in Ingersoll. So as much as the rally itself, I don't think was as militant as some of us hoped it would be, it seems to have at least put some momentum into some type of fight back against Caterpillar.
Well, you've mentioned the blockading of the train. What kind of impact did that have on the lockout or on actions related to the lockout?
I don't know what the financial or economic impact that this action is going to have on Caterpillar, but I think that it's been covered in the press in southwestern Ontario, and it's got coverage on CBC Radio as well. So it's definitely raised awareness about the issues that are going on, and I think that it's also, because it happened in Ingersoll, which is about half hour down the 401 from London by the Kami assembly plant, where there's another CAW local, they're the ones who carried out the blockade, that's basically galvanized support there. So there are dozens upon dozens of people now who have been blockading the train, and which had been built in London shortly before the lockout. And it's also led to some companies, London area companies in southwestern Ontario, to start pulling Caterpillar merchandise off their shelves.
Now, this of course, this lockout is important for the workers themselves. But you seem to think this lockout can be important in a wider sense for the labor movement. In your article that you wrote, "The Canadian Labor at the Crossroads," you seem to think this lockout can have a wider significance, or does have a wider significance. Why is that?
Well, I certainly think that if the workers go down to defeat without a fight, and I don't think that they are going down without a fight. I think we've already seen evidence of that. But the defeat could have a pretty demoralizing impact on a pretty grim-looking labor situation in Ontario, especially with the possible lockout of the municipal workers in Toronto this coming month. But in terms of actually rebuilding the labor movement in Ontario and hopefully beyond, it's one of those cases where the demands being made by the employer in the context of their record profits, the fact that that company, that very factory, was given corporate tax breaks by Harper back in 2008, on top of the fact that the federal government hasn't done anything to intervene, I think that it's one of those polarizing situations where a lot of people could be pulled into activity around secondary pickets at Caterpillar dealerships. It's really a moment for the labor movement to start regaining momentum and organization and so on and so forth to actually build the kind of fighting labor movement that I think we're in desperate need of these days.
Also in your article, as a way of grabbing momentum or building that momentum, you suggest that workers should organize to occupy the factory. Why do you think this tactic might be effective?
Well, yeah, it is a suggestion, and it's not entirely new. The CAW does have a history of plant occupations. There's actually a Caterpillar plant in Brampton that was occupied by CAW workers back in 1991, so just down the 401 from London. And I think that the occupation, given what's happened with Occupy and the labor protests in Wisconsin last year and just the whole atmosphere, political atmosphere that what's happened in Egypt has created around the world, I think that an occupation is the type of action that could have wide popular support, especially in this case. But in the article, I don't. I make it clear that this is the sort of decision that the workers at the plant themselves have to make, and if they make that sort of decision, they're going to bear the brunt of the consequences, not people like me who, you know, live in another town who are making the suggestion. But at the very least, we should be raising those sorts of possibilities, those sorts of tactics for taking on employers who just, I mean, Caterpillar's not listening. They want to crush the union, and I think that desperate times call for desperate measures, and an occupation might be one of those things that turns this thing around.
Well, Doug, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
I've been speaking with Doug Nesbitt. He is a co-chief steward of PSAC 901, which represents Queen's University teaching assistants and fellows. He also co-hosts Rank and File Radio, a weekly labor news program on CFRC 101.9 FM.